Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to The Greek Current, a podcast by the Hellenic American Leadership Council and Kathimerini, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HELC staff. Manfred Weber, the leader of the European People's Party group in the European Parliament, joins The Greek Current to discuss the EU-Turkey relationship and where it is heading, his view on the talks between Greece and Turkey, and the need for Ankara to take concrete steps to show it's serious about conflict resolution, and more. Mr. Weber, welcome, and thank you for joining The Greek Current podcast.
Hello, thank you so much for the opportunity.
Last week, Greece and Turkey kicked off exploratory contacts with the aim of resolving maritime disputes. You've made it clear in a recent op-ed that if Ankara is serious about conflict resolution, then Europe needs to see concrete actions taken rather than another Turkish PR exercise. What steps do you expect Ankara to take?
Expectations from the European side are quite clear. First of all, stop further provocations towards the European side, toward our Greek friends. And we have next to this concrete gas dispute question several other issues on the table, like the Cypriot question, like the question on migration, the continuously ongoing attacks against our border, the activities in Libya, in Syria, and also additionally rule of law inside of Turkey. So there is so much at stake currently on the table. We need now a Turkish partner who is really ready to give in and to respect, let me say, the European Union as a partner and contributes to positive development.
What kind of pressure do you think that Brussels should apply on Ankara to ensure that they engage constructively in this process?
Our main power is economy, for sure. So the readiness of Europe to give Turkey a privileged access to the European single market with the customs union's agreement is for sure the basic, let me say, element for the growth story of Turkey in the last two decades. And that's why Turkey must be aware that there is a lot at stake, that today's customs union is not automatically guaranteed forever. So it's up to the Turkish side to show to us that they want to be partner of Europe. And that is a basic precondition for such a privileged access to the European single market. So again, this is a major point. But let me say the positive side. So I think we really can engage in a better way, for example, on visas for students, for younger generation, to have a positive perspective for the future. If we have a Turkish partner who is constructively ready for compromises with us and with Greece, then we can really engage much more in these elements, exchange on cultural field and all these points. So on this more, let me say, negative side, I would say economy, access to the customs union, to the single market is key. But we also have some offers on the positive side, and let's use now this opportunity.
At the Leaders Summit in December, Turkey was one of the main issues. Sanctions were put on the table, and they will be reviewed at the next summit in March. Are there any sanctions you are looking at in the EU Parliament in particular right now?
Well, we assess the same options like the Council, no doubt about this, but the will among the EPP family, so my political family, together with Kyriakos Mitsotakis as EPP Prime Minister in Greece. So our will to speed up and to show our readiness and to show our credibility as European Union, that after words, and if there is no action from the Turkish side, we act and we are ready for concrete steps. This question of credibility is still on the table. Frankly speaking, our biggest problem on European level, and you know this, is always a unanimous vote when it is about foreign affairs, when it is about sanctions against others in our neighborhood. It's always about this principle of unanimous decisions in the Council level that is stopping Europe. It was in the Belarus case the same. It was in the Turkish case the same. And that's why the bigger question behind is that we have to overcome this rule. We have to come to a majority-making decision process inside of the Council when it is about foreign affairs issues. Europe has enough strength. Europe has enough power to influence the neighborhood in a positive way, but we have to de-block it from some kind of national egoisms which we face from time to time in this field.
In the conclusions of the December summit, it was made clear that EU leaders wanted to coordinate their actions on Turkey with the United States. There's now a new administration in the U.S., the Biden administration. How do you see the European Union working with the United States on this issue moving forward?
You know, we are at the beginning of a new mandate in Washington, so the new administration is now in office for a few days. So that's why it's probably too early to make a final assessment. But on this basic principles behind, when it is about a peace process in Libya, in Syria, when it is about the rule of law question domestically in Turkey, then I think things are clear and America is closely on our side. And this was also one of the elements where finally, I think Erdogan understood that he has to come back to the negotiation tables. So our points, our positions, especially on the gas dispute, for example, are quite solid, are well-funded, and we have good arguments for this. And Kyriakos Mitsotakis even was ready to go to the international court in Den Haag if needed and respect also a court case outcome there. And that's why I think we have a very strong position in this and we can, together with our American partners, achieve even more.
In the recent op-ed that we alluded to earlier, you noted that it wasn't so long ago that the EPP, your political party, called for an end to accession talks with Turkey. Do parties across the political spectrum now share this view?
In the European Parliament today, there is no majority anymore for the idea that Turkey can really join the European Union. And I myself, I think, and my political family, we really think that this was harming the relationships in the last 10, 12, 15, 20 years, because on inside there was, generally speaking, not really the will to include Turkey. And on Turkish side, people, those who were engaged, really felt that they were, let me say, not fairly motivated to go to this way towards a European perspective. So we created disappointments on both sides. And that's why we have to learn the lesson. And that means, let's be frank to each other. Now we are on a turning point in the relationship between Turkey and the European Union. And that to have a good relationship, the precondition is to build up trust and to be frank to each other. And that's why I think, let's be frank, full membership is not achievable, is not possible. Let's go step by step. Let's talk about visa for students. Let's talk about business sector improvements. Let's go step by step, and then we can create again, build up again, trust between the partners.
Despite its current trajectory, Turkey remains important due to its location, to economic ties, and the fact that it's also a NATO member. Where do you see the EU-Turkey relationship heading in the future? You mentioned a couple of areas where Europe and Turkey can cooperate. Where do you see cooperation, for example, on issues like migration?
Well, the migration issue, when you mentioned this, is one of the positive fields where we showed in the last years that cooperation is better than egoism and fight against each other. It's because the EU-Turkey agreement on migration provided for Turkey a lot of help and support for managing the Syrian refugees in their country. And on the other hand, we find a way to really see a possibility for the Europeans to be ready on respecting some migrants who are arriving in Europe. So we both sides are profiting from this development. And this gives us again an indication that case by case, treaty by treaty, subject by subject agreements are much better than this idea of a full enlargement. And that should be the future development. But if you allow me to say, the bigger question is, we as Europeans, we offer a reasonable and respectful partnership. And when there is someone outside who likes this, then he can enjoy it. And others must look for other partners. So if Turkey really don't want to work together anymore with Europe, then I must say good luck. Have fun with Russia. Have fun with China. Have fun with others. So you will immediately understand that a partner like Europe, who is fact-based and the content-based and the serious compromise-oriented partner, is much better finally than all the others in the rest of the world. And that's why we should be ready for this approach, but we also should be tough when it is about our expectations towards Turkey. So we have no gifts. We have only the readiness to give in for a good compromise, and Turkey must understand this.
Aside from its provocations of the Aegean and the Eastern Mediterranean against Greece, Turkey continues to occupy the northern part of Cyprus. It sent drill ships into Cyprus's exclusive economic zone and recently reopened the fenced-off area of Varosha, which was in violation of UN Security Council resolutions. Now, an informal five-party summit on the Cyprus issue is reportedly set to take place under the auspices of the United Nations in early March. The EU is also going to participate, but as an observer. What steps should the EU take to support these talks?
Well, the main message is that the Cypriots' interests are European interests. That is the main message. You know, behind the Cypriot voice, there is Europe behind, the whole European Union. And the Cypriots people must understand and must feel that they are European and they are stronger on these negotiation tables due to their membership in the European Union. That is the main message. That's why, you know, I also found it very problematic that a few months ago, in November last year, the German foreign ministers went to Athens and said publicly that he wants to be a good negotiator between Turkey and Greece. And sorry, that's not the job of foreign ministers of Europe, and especially of the presidency of Europe, of the European Union. In November last year, the German presidency, you know, as Europeans, we are not negotiator. We are next to our friends in Greece and Cyprus. And that is, I think, the most powerful tool we have, we can show to our friends to contribute. And you are right, the behavior of Turkey on the island of Cyprus gives again a clear idea that they don't respect anymore the international agreements like the United Nations framework for Cyprus. And that is extremely crucial. That is extremely serious. please come back to the negotiation table. Please come back to a serious behavior as a serious state, and then we can achieve a lot.
Mr. Weber, I want to move us to another issue that you spoke about last week, and that's Russia. At a meeting last week in Brussels, EU foreign ministers decided to hold off on new sanctions on Moscow in response to the arrest of Kremlin critic Alexei Navalny. You were vocal that the EU had to take a firm stance and sanction the Russians. In your view, how does this, along with kicking the can down the road, as it seems, on Turkey, for example, reflect on the EU's broader foreign policy?
Well, Russia is now becoming again a big test for us as Europeans. Russia is an extremely important neighbor, no doubt about this. But having now the developments with Navalny, with the demonstrations, with the brave people on the streets all over Russia now in mind, and with the strong reaction of the state, of the system, of the Putin system against the democratic opposition in mind, I think it's clear that we have to stand up. So I don't want to compare Turkey with Russia. There are different countries, different situations there. But generally speaking, it's the same subject. It's about whether they respect our way of European way of life, of an independent judiciary, of democracy, of freedom, of the basic principles, or whether they fight against and even use their means and their activities against us. That is at stake. And there we have the same challenge. A united Europe is strong, and a united Europe can also increase now the pressure against Russia.
Mr. Weber, thank you for joining us today on The Greek Current. It was great having you on.
Hi, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
In other news, the EU tightened its rules for visitors from outside the bloc on Monday, specifying that they would only be allowed in freely from countries with very few coronavirus cases and almost none of the more transmissible variants. EU ambassadors agreed the new measure for travel from non-EU countries, including Britain, at a meeting in Brussels. The agreement covers non-essential travel and serves as a guideline for EU countries, which have the ultimate say on their border policies. Meanwhile, the European Commission announced on Sunday that AstraZeneca will deliver 9 million more doses of its coronavirus vaccine to the EU than it offered last week. The announcement follows a week of escalating tensions over massive anticipated shortfalls. Finally, Turkish President Erdogan said on Monday his ruling AK party and its nationalist allies, the MHP, may start work on drafting a new constitution less than 4 years after overhauling the previous constitution to grant his office sweeping powers. During a televised speech, Erdogan recalled that the country's last two constitutions, enacted in 1961 and 1982, were drafted following military coups, and said they contained indelible traces of the quote-unquote military tutelage. Erdogan said the new constitution should be a civilian one, but didn't elaborate. His remarks come weeks after the leader of the nationalist MHP suggested constitutional changes to ban the pro-Kurdish People's Democratic Party, or HDP, for separatism, a move the HDP condemned as an attempt to silence 6 million votes. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.